The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Merry meet, and welcome to Cauldron Central. I'm going to cut to the chase because, as usual, this hour is going to fly by. My guest tonight is Anwen Avalon, and she's a water priestess and a water witch, with over 10 years of water priestess experience and over 15 years of priestess and magical experience. She's devoted her life as a priestess to the path of water, which is expressed through the study and creation of art, witchcraft, temple arts, dance, and water magic. She also has completed her Reiki master teacher training, my God, and studied herbalism and Middle Eastern folk and esoteric dancing. She writes the Patheos.com blog, The Water Witch. She's an award-winning international known dancer with a repertoire of water and mermaid-themed belly dancing performances. And for those of you who listen to Stirring the Cauldron regularly, you remember that Anwen has visited with us before talking about water witchcraft. And today she's sharing her new book, The Way of the Water Priestess. As usual, you know, feel free to ask Anwen any questions or share some comments. But in order to do that, you've got to be in the Para-X chat room. So please pop over to paraxradionetwork.com and join us. And Anwen, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, well, you write books. I'm going to have you because they're good books. Pretty simple. And like I said, we're going to start talking now because I know we're going to run out of time. So as usual, I want to get down to basics first. And for those who may not be familiar with the term, you might want to explain what a water priestess is.
Oh, that's great. Great place to start. So a water priestess is somebody who has dedicated their life to walking the path of water, and most often from a perspective of service. And you can be a water priestess, or a water priest, or a water shaman, or mystic, or a non-gendered version of priest or priestex or priestess. The common thing is the service to water. No matter how you frame it, no matter how your path is or how you frame your path, many different people can walk the path of the water priestess. And in my own practice, it's very much focused on not only working with different bodies of water, but the water that's in our own bodies, as well as the spirits that dwell within or around different bodies of water. And so the ancient water priestesses, it's my belief that there were absolutely water temples. We have water temples in the archaeological record, and that there were priestesses or sacred people that tended the waters. And a lot of it, I think, was lost to time and history. And I've put a lot of little pieces together, trying to piece a puzzle back together to really establish this is an actual practice, that water was once held as sacred, and it is still sacred. We have just forgotten. and I think take it for granted. And so my path is not only bringing awareness to the sacredness of water, but helping to stir that passion and emotion in others so that we can walk this path of the priestess alongside indigenous water walkers or other types of similar paths, but to frame it within more of a pagan or magical perspective.
Mm-hmm. And you've been drawn to water ever since you were a child and visited sacred springs all over the world, and you began to collect water from different sites over the years. But when did you realize that you were a witch and that your calling was to be a water witch and priestess?
Oh, so great question. And I've answered this a lot, and I feel like there's time frames. And it's kind of hard to pinpoint because there was the aha moment, but that came after really kind of working this. So my aha moment was in my very early 20s. I picked up a book about witchcraft and I opened it and just, I was reading it and I've never read a book so fast. It was like I was starving for this knowledge and I just was flipping through the pages and exclaiming like, I knew it. I knew that there was more to this existence. I knew that there was more to just herbal magic, that you could work with the spirit of the plant. I knew that there was more depth to just, you know, recreational water, like where we can go skiing or swimming, and there was more to it. But it wasn't until much, much later, after I had been studying as a solitary for a while, and then I had joined a circle, and then I actually went through a traditional witchcraft training in a traditional year and a day type of program. And it was right after my initiation that I started to really put pieces together and be like, oh, this is this and this and this and this. And I basically looked back and was like, everything that I've ever done, even as a child, surrounds the water or is connected to the water in some way. Mm-hmm. So I realized very early on that I was a witch. And then it was many years later that I looked back and was like, wow, there's water. Like, is water witches a thing? And you might actually have heard the term water witching before, because that term, I believe, goes all the way back to the 1500s. And it was actually to describe a person that would douse for water. Mm-hmm. But dowsing is still a form of divination. Mm-hmm. And so I was very surprised that we didn't have a large body of magical work that connected us to water. We'd had thousands of books on ceremonial magic, on herbal magic, on green magic, even candle magic, incense. So all of the elements had multiple books. And when I started looking for books that were just about water, there were like three.
Wow.
There was not a lot. And I was like, well, there's got to be more. Mm-hmm. And so I then started really digging. And that's how actually my first book, Water Witchcraft, came about, is because the practices were preserved within the folk traditions, because much was stamped out by the rise of Christianity and really removing the spirits from the water completely. And so as I was doing my research and finding this information, I really wanted to legitimatize it as well. Basically, like, not only does this exist, but we have a path that focuses around water. If there can be green witches, there can be blue witches.
I didn't think of it that way, but yeah, I like that.
And so, yeah, that's it really kind of culminated in this finding all these different little pieces and putting them together. Then Water Priestess is kind of a follow-up to some of that work.
Yeah. Well, okay. So you were talking about joining a coven early on for guidance. But was the coven water focused, or was it just kind of to get you in the witchy kind of place? Well,
it's interesting because it was on the coast. So I had moved to coastal North Carolina, and this coven actually was on the coast. Though we weren't working specifically water magic, it does just so happen, though, to turn out that my high priestess, my teacher, was very watery. Cancer, Pisces are very, very dominant in her astrological chart. Mm-hmm. And my other teacher, her partner, was a quadruple Scorpio. And so that was definitely at that point, like just at that other point where I had been like, hey, there's a lot of water in here. While we weren't working specifically on the beach or anything like that, my teachers were very watery already because of this astrological energy that was in their birth charts. And that was definitely like another little like check in the box of like, interesting that you didn't end up with a quadruple Aries, you know, or someone with heavy Libra in their chart. Both of them were very, very much water focused. And my Reiki training actually was done by the same woman. And that actually, my very first Reiki attunement was done just feet away from the ocean. It was a coastal North Carolina town, and there was a little shop, a little metaphysical shop in the beach area. And I taught dance there for a little while. And so I had my very first and second Reiki attunements right there in that coastal beach area. So, I mean, all of those things were just little tiny little nuggets that after I put all of the other things together, you could look at this and be like, wow, individually, they're not really significant. But when you put them together, it is.
Well, it just means that it was meant to be. I mean, I don't think you could have avoided it at any point because of that. I mean, that was just your path. That was your calling. And it came to you in a sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I never set out to really be like, I think I'll be a water witch or I think I'll be a water priestess. It was like, oh, this is a thing and I have to figure out where to get the information, where to learn more, because it just didn't exist. But thank goodness for folklore.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, in 2012, you made a pilgrimage to Glastonbury and you were an initiated priestess and witch by then. So you said, though, that you went with an open heart and you came back changed. Now, how did that experience change you?
Oh, well, that was just at the I don't know, I wouldn't say it's the beginning, but I was definitely in the midst of really figuring out like this water path is a thing. And I went to England. Now, my mother's British, and I was raised in the States, but my mother's British, and I had gone there many times. But this time it was different. Like you said, I was initiated priestess at this point. And I went to Glastonbury for the very first time. Now, I'd been to the UK so many times. We would spend some summers over there. And I'd spent a lot of time in Bath, where Sulis's water temple is.
Yeah.
But this particular time, I went to specifically experience Glastonbury and to really go to the Chalice Well. I'd heard about it. I'd seen about it. I had been learning a little bit about it. And so I went and I just had a really profound experience. The White Spring is actually right next door to the Chalice Well. It's a real strange place. It's a old Victorian well house that's been turned into a temple. And it sits right next to Dion Fortune's old house. Mm. And right across from the Chalice Well, underneath, kind of in the shadow of the Tor. And I remember just kind of walking by and being like, what is this? And walking in to this candlelit temple that had water on the floor and shrines everywhere. Mm. And it was one of those moments where, like, you go to take a breath and you just, like, it just kind of takes your breath away. Mm-hmm. And I stayed in there as long as I could. It was just so amazing and so profound and so magical. It's like the nocturnal energies of water and of Avalon, where the Chalice Well is more the solar energies, this bright, beautiful garden with all of these flowers growing versus the dark temple that's very cave-like with immersion pools. And there are shrines to Gwynnapnith, who's the fairy king, as well as Bridget, the goddess Bridget. Mm-hmm. And there's also lots of Morgan Le Fay's energy that flows around. The whole temple is just mind-blowing. There's not a lot of pictures on the internet either, because they keep it camera-free. So you can't really have to immerse yourself in this. Yeah. But So I came out of that and I came home and I wrote my first class, my like very first water class that I ever taught. And I remember it was like three columns of just bullet points. Mm-hmm. And that was the start of everything, because then I was learning about it. I was sharing it with others. I put it into the 9-month water magic course, which actually starts on the 1st, March 1st. So, it changed me in a way that it gave me confidence. It felt very spirit led. I don't want to say that spirit, like, saw me there and was like, you shall do these things. But that's kind of what happened. Mm-hmm. Very much, I went with an open heart, very much like, what's the next step? How can I connect more to water? How can I draw closer to this path? And it almost felt like from then on, they were really kind of driving, because all of a sudden new information would come in or new opportunities would come in. And and then the next thing you know, fast forward several years and we're here. Sorry, my dogs.
No, that's okay. Okay, I just put it on mute because Ginny and Steve's dog was barking just too. So maybe they were in tune with each other. So do most cultures honor water goddesses?
Yes, everywhere across the world, throughout time and space, through the archaeological record, everywhere from India and China to the Celtic lands, even here in the U.S., there's sacred spaces, sacred water sites. One that comes to mind is Montezuma's Well, which Montezuma never actually went there, visited there. However, It's an indigenous sacred site, and there's lots of lore around this. It's located actually just outside of Sedona, Arizona. So not surprising there, right?
Right. Very spiritual.
It shares a river with Sedona. So the Verde River flows through that area and then turns into a creek, which is Bear Creek. And that parallels very much the flow of this amazing spring. And it's very much like Cenote Angelia in the South America. I'm going to get this wrong. I think it's Peru, but I could get this I could get it wrong. But it has a false bottom, just like that does. So at about 50 feet down, you think oh, hey, this is the bottom of it. But then there's another like 75 feet. And it's very much like the Cenote Angelito, where there's a false bottom and then this river that flows underneath the water. Mm. And interestingly enough, that particular body of water is called Cenote Angelita because the angel, it is connected to lore about angels or Quetzalcoatl. And so is this Montezuma as well. And it does have arsenic. So it filters through this limestone into this pure, clear, beautiful water. Mm. And the locals lived right next to it. There's ruins that you can actually see. There's sacred water everywhere, even in the middle of the desert, in the middle of Arizona, where you would think there wouldn't be water. But this particular sacred spring has been honored and revered for thousands of years. In fact, I just wrote a blog about this. It's actually the last blog. So it's Sedona's Sacred Waters is what it's called.
Oh, good. And while you're saying that, where can people find the blog?
Oh, okay. So it is pathios.com/waterwitch.
Easy.
Or you can just Google the Water Witch Pathios and you'll find it.
Okay. No, that's great because, you know, get it in while we can before we get so tangled up in other things that you don't get to tell everybody where they can go. So this is good. Let's talk about a little bit about the healing power of water. I mean, we're aware of water because we drink it, we bathe in it, we water our plants with it, we do all kinds of stuff with it. But just like the air we breathe, and you mentioned this a few minutes ago, in some ways we take water for granted. And I don't know that people always think of it as something that has healing power.
Yes. So it's quite interesting. It has both the power to heal and to curse. And it's quite interesting because I mentioned Sulis's temple in Bath a little while ago. And it was a place that people went to actually immerse in the waters, to bathe and to heal. But when they did excavations, they found 100 curse tablets. So it's very, very, very interesting. The duality that comes with it. But the chalice well, which we've already mentioned a little bit, has a very, very big connection with healing. In fact, it's been turned into a beautiful peace garden. And you can actually, people go specifically to seek healing. Mm-hmm. Now, immersing in water is for different reasons, whether that's for magical healing, whether it's for, in Christianity, like a baptism, mm-hmm. where you actually would be immersed to kind of come out new. It's a renewal or rebirth type of energy. So even within Christianity, water's used as this purification, as this not only symbol of change, but sometimes the vehicle for that change. We also find healing deep within the Celtic lore of Avalon. Avalon is an island. It is a otherworldly island. So I do believe that Glastonbury is a portal to this particular realm, Avalon. Mm-hmm. And Avalon is known to be an island surrounded by water where people went to heal. And most famously, King Arthur was supposed to be taken to Avalon to be healed and come back as the once and future king. So we also have the death and rebirth energy that comes along with that as well. And interestingly enough, in Glastonbury Abbey, there's a little sign that says that this is where King Arthur was buried. So this is one of the reasons why people believe that Glastonbury and Avalon could be one and the same or have a connection. But it goes deeper than just the more modern day energy that's there. It's very, you know, Glastonbury and Sedona have very, very similar energies. Mm-hmm. But the healing priestesses of Avalon, now we've all heard about the priestesses of Avalon, of course, from pop culture. We even know Morgan Le Fay because she became a character within DC Comics. Which fascinates me because I really believe some of these spirits are timeless and they just come forth in a way that we can understand and process them. But Morgan Le Fay, the original text, the very first mention of her ever, describes her as the chief of nine sisters, who is an educated woman who had not only the knowledge of the stars, but of healing, of mathematics, of music. They fit very interestingly alongside the muses. And both, interestingly enough, they're both considered to be groups of nine. We also see this nine come up over and over and over again within Celtic lore. We have nine sacred woods. Mm-hmm. We have nine sacred, or the ninth wave is supposed to be not only a entrance into the other world, but the water from the ninth wave can be collected and used in healing. So within Celtic lore, that nine plays a very, very big role. But when we look at water and sacred women throughout history, mythology, folklore associated, we find them in these groups of nine. And there are Scottish folklore about nine maidens. And so that's why there's actually several different wells in Scotland named Nine Maidens Well. And these wells then were known very much for healing. And in folk traditions that survived, people would go to the sacred well. 15, 16, 17, 18, 1900s before the, you know, very modern time period that we're in now. But honestly, people still recreate these traditions. They don't quite know that it was a healing tradition. Now we put prayer ribbons. But originally what would happen is they would visit the well, perhaps on a Sunday or on consecutive Fridays or consecutive Saturdays, depending on the tradition and when the folk magic was recorded. You can tell the Christian influences when you go seven times in a row on Sunday. But if you see things like nine times on a Saturday or a Friday, it usually has more pagan roots. Mm-hmm. And what happened is, say someone was, let's say they had shoulder pain, like they've had chronic shoulder pain. They would actually tear a piece of fabric from that particular shoulder. So your clothing that would be sitting in that area, and you journey to this sacred well and dip the clouti or clouti into mm-hmm. the well itself and then retie that onto the area. And now there's variations of this as well, because in other cases, instead of tying it back to the person, it would be impaled upon a hawthorn tree or buried under a rock. Now, in the time period that we're talking about, this fabric would have been natural, right? So it would have been cotton or linen or something like that. So the idea was this folk magic idea or folk tradition of transference, meaning that the person would be asking either the spirit that dwells within the well, the spirit of the well, or the spirit of the sacred trees that are often found around these sacred wells to take the illness. Mm-hmm. And then as the rag or piece of fabric decomposed, the idea was that so would the disease. It would then be removed slowly. So as it disintegrated, so would the disease disintegrate around you. Mm-hmm. So those are just some of those traditions that were held, passed down orally, so that we could actually kind of be like, oh, these are really old practices, you know, and mm-hmm. they go back way, way back in time. Water has also been used to clear negative energies, mm-hmm. which often be the first step in a healing process anyways. Right. One of the, I believe and I feel, especially in my own experience, that sometimes healing is stunted or you can't progress into that healing energy because you haven't removed those things that are causing that pain or disruption. Mm-hmm. And so just the simple act of cleansing with water can be an act of healing, mm-hmm. To remove those negative energies. And oh my goodness, there's so much.
Yeah, there is. And we've got to go for a quick break right now. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about water spirit guides and a whole lot more. So stay tuned, everybody. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Stirring the Cauldron will be right back. So don't go away.
If you end up with webbed feet,
remember, you've been warned.
Explore the second edition of the Witch's Oracle Deck through 45 innovative cards and enhanced guidebook that peers into the world of the witch. The deck's stunning artwork has a new look and includes 7 brand new inspirational cards. Each card now includes a suggested crystal or gemstone to enhance your reading, as well as a magical incantation that provides energy, reinforces the card's meaning, and helps the desired message to be sent out into the universe. The easy-to-navigate guide also has a new look and offers straightforward, gentle guidance that takes readers through both good times and bad. And now includes a chapter on crystal and gemstone divination by the amazing Nicholas Pearson. The Witch's Oracle. It is a perfect divination deck for witches as well as non-pagans, and is designed to suit both seasoned readers and beginners alike. Find out more about the Witch's Oracle deck at www.marlabrooks.com, and you can purchase the deck from schifferbooks.com, amazon.com, or order a copy from your favorite bookseller.
You've no doubt heard of Tango and Cash, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Perhaps it takes two to tango. Well, now, on the first and third Thursdays of each month, there's a show called Tango and Friends at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network with your host, Bruce Tango. And yes, there will be at least two to tango on each episode, sometimes even more. There's going to be lots of topics and lots of guests you'll all know and lots of surprises. Tango and Friends, every first and third Thursday of the month at 8 p.m. right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Well, thank you all for sticking around. My guest is Anwen Avalon, and we're going to be talking about, well, we are talking about her new book, The Way of the Water Priestess. So, Anwen, how would a person recognize that they were a water witch and might be on the path of being a water princess and just don't know it?
So I actually get this question a lot from people. How do I know what kind of witch I am? Or how do I know if yeah. I'm a water witch? And in the beginning, I don't think we do know. I think it comes from taking a look at your practice, from what you have done, what you've experienced, and most importantly, what you're drawn to. I've had many students and people tell me similar stories where they were very much like me, where they spent so much time in the water as a child and they knew there was more, but they just didn't know until they saw it or read it and were like, oh, now I know. It's almost like a knowing when the information is presented where they're like, yes, that's it. That. I don't quite know what that is, but that is it. So looking at that, looking at your practice, looking at what you're drawn to, and even myself, I mean, I consider myself a water witch, water priestess, but I still work things like candle magic. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to be exclusive to right. water. But if you gravitate that way or your practice is very dominant in that water element, then perhaps. Also, many people have been called by water goddesses, Aphrodite, There's Morgan Le Fay is some goddess, fairy woman, ancestral spirit, depending on how you want to frame her and how you work with her. Mm-hmm. She's very active with a lot of people connected to water. Many people have been called or feel called to the water because of their work with a deity or spirit that's connected.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So as I mentioned before the break, let's talk about water spirit guides, because some people might not think about that. You know, that they're, I mean, we know that spirit guides come in different classifications, you know, or specialties like doctors. Do you need to be a water witch or priestess to ask for help from a water spirit guide, or does everyone actually have one?
Oh, I don't know if everybody has one, but there certainly are a plethora of water spirits to work with. I mean, anywhere from our physical animals like otters and turtles and dolphins to animal spirits of the other world, perhaps like a kelpie, although I wouldn't say it's a good idea to work with a kelpie. There are benevolent water horses, though. The kelpie is a little bit on the opposite side of that. And then we have the overarching umbrella of the fair folk or the fae. Mm-hmm. And there are a significant portion of water spirits that belong to that classification. And a lot of people actually think that the Fae are Celtic. And while that, why it's true, and that particular framework of the fair folk or the Fae, Fae in French, the fair folk in Irish, different cultures have different ways of kind of describing them. Mm-hmm. We find the classification of this spirit worldwide. In China, there are similar mermaid and water serpent folklore as in France. And so we have just this wide, so many. I mean, there's just so many. So the Fae actually are worldwide. We have a lot here in the US, but they belong to the earth, to nature. They are symbiotic. It's so the whole planet basically would then have these spirits either guarding or dwelling within or some capacity. And then we have the deities, Poseidon and the goddess Danu or the goddess Sulis. And some of them are very, very popular, as we know, Aphrodite. And some of them are more obscure, like Sulis. And, you know, you can work with different goddesses. You can work with different spirits. I will say, just in general, always go with caution. Mm-hmm. The fair folk tend to not want to work with humans, but I've actually found that when it comes to water, that this seems to be a little different because, for example, a mermaid spirit, right? This would belong to that umbrella of or grouping, right? Mm-hmm. And we have a very famous mermaid slash goddess slash fairy woman, Melusine. And we see her in French folklore or French fairy tales and folklore and European. And we even see a little bit here in the US with the Starbucks logo.
Yes.
and so it's quite interesting because how can you even classify these, right? Mermaid mm-hmm. or goddess? And a lot of times with water, because water is so fluid, the answer is yes. mm-hmm. Spirit a goddess or is the spirit a mermaid? Yes. Both. So the mermaid spirits very specifically have a bad reputation for sinking ships and drowning sailors, yes. But they also have a really good reputation for gifting magical powers, magical tools or objects and wishes, because different folk tales tell us that how we treat the water and how we treat the water spirits directly informs how they treat us. And so if you are going with reverence to the water's edge and asking for help, you may actually get a connection, but you might not. So it's hard to say if everybody could have a water guide, but mm-hmm. I certainly believe that there are a large percentage or group of these water spirits are very interested in working with us. And I think that it has to do a lot with the pollution of the water, the current state of water. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite stories, good stories about the mermaids is the old man and the mermaid, and it's low tide and this mermaid gets stranded on a rock and he picks her up without a word and just takes her and places her back in the water. And he didn't ask for anything. And in return, she granted him three wishes. And so he wanted to be a peller, which is like a wise man, right? Wise woman, having the knowledge of herbs, having the knowledge of prophecy and of second sight. And she gifted it as this reciprocity for saving her, and then also gave him a comb to comb the waters so that... So when you comb in this story, she gives him this comb to comb the waters and it creates a sound to call her. And so basically at this point, now he has a water spirit guide, a mermaid guide that he's working with in reciprocity. So I guess to the moral of this whole thing, right, to sum it all up, mm-hmm. Is that if we're going to form relationships with these water spirits for positive, good reasons, like cleaning the water, protecting the water, doing magical work to help the world in general and water in general, then we get a very different type of reaction than if you were just to light a candle, try and summon a mermaid spirit and be like, and I want some treasure. So I think it has to do more about the approach, especially mm-hmm. with water spirits. If you're interested in walking the path of water, I find that many of the spirits answer me, my students, other people that I've worked with and experienced, very readily. And a lot of them find, oh, this spirit's been with me the whole time. I just now realized.
Okay, so I was going to bring this up a little bit later, but someone in the chat room, she's a witch, was posting that she always loved the beach. She loves the ocean. It's so rejuvenating. And she said it has a special kind of magic for her. And then someone suggested, well, maybe you're a water witch. And she said, well, I would like that. Always loved water. So I was going to bring up the fact that for those listening who are on the path or interested in becoming a water witch or priestess, I was going to have you tell everybody about your water priestess training course and the 9-month water magic course. And yes. You mentioned the one in the beginning that it starts on Monday. So let's do it now.
Okay. All right. So we'll start with that one. So the 9-month water magic course is very much like the Water Witchcraft book. Water Witchcraft focuses mostly on the Celtic path. However, the course expands further than that. And it's 9 months of really immersing yourself in the folklore, the magic, making physical charms out of shells or a divination system out of the items that the ocean has given you. There's sacred bathing and working with different water spirits and learning how to make different waters, like gem water and floral essences and stuff like that. Now, the water priestess also does actually learn some of that too. But going back to the 9-month course, it very much focuses on witchcraft. We have a section on Avalon, but it is very, very much about making magic, making talismans, amulets, physical tools to work with water and the water spirits, as well as immersions. The Water Priestess course is completely different, although it's hard to not have some overlap. And this is a very non-path specific approach, because I'm a Celtic witch, that's my path, but the water spirits were very much like, bring it to more people, create it so that other people can have a foundation to then build their path, or to be able to integrate it into their already formed path. What if you're Norse and you have Norse practices and that you want to start working with water? So I take a little bit more of a metaphysical approach, where it, instead of this is very specific to here, it's here are the tools, the basics, the knowledge. Now, let's create your version. So it actually runs a little bit different than the 9-month course. The intro course is free. It's very, very bubbly and fun and meant to really just get people started making altars and going to the river to do a blessing. And then the second one, the next one, the water bearer, so they go well maiden, water bearer, that is much deeper, where basically I give you a grounding exercise and you ground this particular way with water, the way I've told you. And then the assignments are to then take that and start altering it and changing it to fit your path, to fit who you are. It's run in modules, one after the other, versus a big chunk like the 9-month course. But this is very, very interesting because we have so many different people and we're learning so much from each other. I've learned so much from my students in this, because everybody has their own way to frame things and their own experiences. So ultimately, if you want to be in service to water or water spirits and work this path and walk this path, but still have freedom for what you like and what spirit you work with and what your path is, then the Water Priestess course. I even actually have a Christian mystic in my Water Priestess course, and she works with the saints that are dedicated to different wells instead of the old fairy spirits that would be, associated with a different well. So she takes on more of this working with saints and working with Christ as a Jesus as a water god. I mean, and he technically was, right? Fisher of men, water to wine, walking on water. And so I really feel like the spirits basically tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, you can do this. Mm-hmm. And we need you to do this because someone has to do it so that other people can take it further. And right. So that's really what both the Water Priestess training and the Water Priestess book are about, are here's some foundation. Now, what can you do? What can you build with this? Yes. And how can that benefit your community?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. We work for that, for sure. I have so many questions, and we're not going to get to them, but there's a question in the chat room that you mentioned something earlier about working with water in your body, and can you share a little bit on that?
Yes. Okay. Oh, my goodness. So there's actually a book coming out soon. I was looking at it this morning. It's not mine, but I'm very excited about it. It's called The Secret... I think it's The Secret Language of Water, and it is The Secret Intelligence of Water is what it's called, and it's about to drop in April. And I was looking at this woman's work today, and I was it's just brilliant. Mm-hmm. Dr. Emoto, Japanese scientist that passed away a few years ago, took photographs of like flash frozen water droplets to basically start documenting how vibration, energy, pollution, sound, and different things like that would affect the water. And so what he found was that heavy metal music, anger, yelling at a bottle of water would produce a much different crystal than if you were to speak love to the water. And so he documented this. And some people are a little unsure. They call it pseudoscience because there's no such thing as a particular love crystal. You cannot recreate that crystal. But this woman that has done this secret intelligence of water, by her name's Veda Austin. Her website has pictures where she's actually taken like a photograph, and she's charged this water with a photograph for several days, and then does the same thing where she flash freezes the crystal and then takes a look at it and takes a picture of it. And what she's put together is amazing. There's portraits of people that show up in the ice. Like she has them side by side, wow. The picture and this. She's done different items. She's done people's pictures, all sorts of stuff, and really established that the water takes on the energy of what you put in it, or what kind of energy vibration. If we can charge water with a leaf, and then take a picture of that water at a microscopic level, and then that ice crystal looks just like the leaf, we have to pay attention to that. Mm-hmm. And so within our own bodies, if we think about that, if we were a vessel or a bottle of water, which we already are a body of water. I mean, we're made of 70 to 80% water, depending on hydrated or dehydrated we are. And so we are technically vessels of water. And so if we already know that saying hateful things to a jar of water will produce an ice crystal that looks like a scrambled egg, and that speaking love and positive things to a different bottle of water would produce these beautiful hexagonal crystals, then what is that doing to our body? What are our negative thoughts doing to our body? What about that negative self-talk? All of those kind of things. And so the power of positivity is a little cliched, but in this case, we can actually see over time that water will change and adapt to that and also put those frequencies out. So our own bodies, then, we can actually shift what the water in our body is holding and producing and the energy around it by just changing our mindset by speaking beautiful things instead of being like, oh, I gained 5 pounds. I'm so fat. Look at that. I've gained 5 pounds, but my body is still amazing. Mm-hmm. It programs us differently, and it's on a molecular level. I also want to do one more. Jen Isabel Friend. She is, I actually have done an interview with her on my Water Priestess series, and she's a water scientist. Mm. And she talks about this kind of stuff on a better scientific level than I can. I'm the mystic, I'm the magic, I'm the spirit worker, and she does a lot of that as well, but then she has this twist to the scientific side. So if you're interested in learning a little bit more about that from somebody that speaks from a scientific standpoint, check her work out. And her name is Jen Isabel Friend. And she's got a couple courses that actually teaches you how to vortex your own water, how to choose the right water to put in your body. Because that's the other thing. Spring water versus distilled water will actually have effects on your body. Mm-hmm. Distilled water has been turned to steam and then turned back into water. Spring water is bottled at the source, and they're very, very different, and they affect us differently. I actually don't do well with distilled water. My body wants spring water, mm-hmm. and that's what it loves.
I've been getting it too for some reason, and I didn't used to. So maybe something inside of me said, get smart and do it. We're running pretty much out of time, but I want to say that each chapter of the book includes exercises and rituals like creating a sacred well or a water healing ritual. And it's full of neat things because, I mean, like among the exercises, you talk about creating a book of tides. Now, most of us are familiar with the book of shadows, but who knew, that there was a book of tides?
This is a term that we've actually been using in the Sea Witch community. So there's a Sea Witch Facebook group that I've been on for years, moderator with some of the other wonderful people. And it's a term that we had been just kind of using for a long time. Someone would pop in and be like, this is my book of tides. Different names for these, grimoires or books or journals where we are writing our processes down. So yeah, the Book of Tides, it's basically like your Book of Shadows, but as watery people, we try to flow not only with the moon cycles, but with the watery tides as well, which are also connected. But
that I was like, oh, this is very cool. So, I mean, I was learning a lot just from looking at that. And I think, at some point, you mentioned it earlier, but I hope you'll come back one time and just talk about the Avalonian tradition, because that's kind of interesting to me.
It parallels. See, I really feel like Avalon drew me to her sacred shores specifically to be like, okay, and you're going to do the water side of this, because water is so prevalent in the modern day Glastonbury lore, as well as the ancient mythology and folklore, Healing Isle.
It'll be good. I'll get in touch with you about that because I'm really curious. We've got like a couple of minutes. I want you to give out your websites where people can find you and find out more about all your services, like Whispers from the Waters and stuff. So where can they find you? And go ahead. You got more than one.
waterpriestess.com. Focuses very much on the Water Priestess training. I have a bio up there, but it's very much there for that. So if you're interested in Water Priestess work, head on over, sign up for the free course. Waterwitchcraft.com is my main website, and that does have my divination services, Whispers from the Waters, as well as classes. And I spend a lot of my time on social media time on Instagram, and you can find me at Anwen Avalon. I do have Facebook and Facebook groups, but I'm not very active there right now. But there's also TikTok and YouTube. Actually, YouTube's a really good one because if you're interested in learning more about this or just hearing me ramble a lot more, then I have several videos that go back a couple of years on YouTube. And I talk about this kind of stuff and get more into depth with some of the different spirits like Melusine or mermaids and stuff like that.
Good. All right. So everybody, thank you for joining us tonight. And also, you're going to come back, Anwen, and we're going to talk about more stuff. And maybe it's going to be a two-hour show next time. I don't know, because we always run out of time, and I left out so much this time that,
It goes by so fast.
We'll think about it. Yes, it does. It flies when you're having interesting guests. Yes. All right. So thank you all. And until next time, everybody, merry meet, blessed be, and good night.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stuff. stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited.